Well, hi everyone, it's Kelly at Women for One, and today I am so excited to talk to my friend, Melissa Joy Johnson. I can't even tell you how excited I get to talk to a friend, someone that's a supporter, someone that I feel is part of my tribe, because I think each of us needs those people in our lives that we feel supported by, we feel connected and aligned with. And so today we're going to talk a little bit about this unique take Melissa has and belief system that she has on the world. And it's really, to me, cutting edge. So I'm really honored to have her here. And let me tell you a little bit about her before we start. So Melissa is best known for her ability to engage people from all over the world to embrace their true, authentic power. And I love that because that's what we're doing at Women for One. And how she does this is by playing in the field of the heart. And stay with me here because we're going to talk a little bit about that. So she has this unique perspective on how we're able to experience living joyfully and loving completely, which I think is like, what else is there in life? Whenever I'm asked, what do I want to do in life? I want to live joyfully and love. So really excited. Let me tell you a little bit about what she's done in this world. She is an author. She speaks and teaches MJoy, which is her nickname, MJoy, which is awesome. I am Joy. Seminar teachings dedicated to heart-centered awareness and practical personal empowerment for everyone. Also, what I really like is that she integrates science and spiritual concepts into practical daily experiences. And she's the author of The Little Book of Big Potentials, which I just love that name, 24 Fields of Flow, Fulfillment, Abundance, and Joy in the Everyday Life. She's also the author of MJoy Practically Speaking, Matrix Energetics, and Living in Your Infinite Potential. And she also co-authored with Dr. Richard Bartlett from Matrix Energetics, which is how I met her, Into the Matrix, Guides, Grace, and the Field of the Heart, and the Physics of Miracles, Tapping into the Field of Consciousness Potential. She's also the author of Practical Play, The Heart-Centered Way, a complimentary play guide to Little Book of Big Potentials, which will be out a little bit later this year, or like probably, we'll talk about it, probably in April it'll be out, but we'll talk about that moving forward. So I first saw Melissa speak at a Matrix Energetics weekend in Seattle, and personally, I was blown away by her passion and the relatable and grounded manner in which she explained complex concepts for all of us to embrace and empower ourselves. So with that huge introduction, welcome, Melissa.
Well, thank you very much, Kelly. I appreciate the introduction. And if I may, I just would like to make one point of clarification. Practical Play, The Heart-Centered Way is already available in print, Kindle, and audiobook. It's The Integrity Effect, my forthcoming book, which will be available later this year.
Thank you. Thank you for that. I appreciate that. There we go. But you can, you know, access Melissa. We'll have her website and also all of her information. So thanks for the clarification. Thanks, Melissa.
Absolutely.
So moving forward, what I'd like to start with, because at Women for One, we're all about sharing our truth and our stories and experiences. Can you give us a few highlights about who Melissa Joy is and how you came to do the work that you do today?
Sure. And realize that any points that I bring forth about who Melissa is, they're just sort of access points to get a little bit familiar with my story, so to speak. And our stories are so important, as you know, Women for One truth tellers. Our stories, though, they don't really define us. They just describe experiences that we've had. So, you know, with all that being said, you know, I've always kind of been fascinated with the nature of reality. I mean, I remember being like 5 or 6 years old, and my family and my parents sitting me down and telling me that they're getting divorced, and I remember asking myself, did I create this reality, or is reality happening to me? And that's a pretty deep question to ask when you're, you know, a little child. But I think, you know, throughout my life, I've always been very fascinated with, you know, what is the true nature of reality, and what is our role in creating our experiences? Do we really create our own reality, or does it happen to us, or is it both? And that, you know, eventually led me to want to be a psychology major. And what I learned in psychology was, scientific maps to study reality, but not really getting into the nitty gritty of what makes up our experiences. I always have had a passion for helping people. And I think some of that passion in wanting to help and heal others was an outloop of my own desire of wanting to help and heal myself, to really feel the experience of wholeness and self-love and connection to my own authenticity and my own integrity. But I didn't realize that. So after college, I actually got into the pharmaceutical industry. I thought, what better way to help people than to provide prescription medications for treatment of their diseases. And actually, this was back in the early 90s. And when I got into the profession, it was the only vocation that was paying women dollar for dollar what it was paying men. And so I was all excited. I thought, wow, I've landed a job with an equal opportunity employer. And what I didn't really know then, as I know now, was that, one of the strategies that the pharmaceutical industry would utilize was to hire intelligent, attractive women to influence the predominantly male allopathic physicians. It was a form of, we'll just call it, surrogate power of sex cells. And so even though you really needed to know your stuff, there was sort of a subversive nature that was going on in the profession that was not something that I was entirely comfortable with. There were other things that transpired in the pharmaceutical industry that I was out of alignment with. And eventually, because I was out of integrity with what I was doing, my body started to break down and I started to get sick. And rather than listening to the callings of my heart, inviting me to trust and make different choices, I kept justifying that I needed to stay in the profession and that I was being overly sensitive. And how often do we do this because we're afraid of making a change, that we dismiss the callings of our heart, we don't trust ourselves, and we justify continuing on the path that we're on, even if we're not in integrity with it. And what happened is in the getting sick, I then needed to look for different options to heal what was ailing me. And that led me on a quest for, we could call it complementary medicine or integrative medicine or holistic healing. I started just exploring different methods of consciousness, different models, and eventually gained the courage to leave the pharmaceutical industry and begin carving out a career of not just healing myself, but healing others as well through what I refer to now as the physics of integrity. And I've been teaching life transformational seminars around the globe now since 2008, and in roughly 2013, 2014, launched the MJOY teachings based on heart-centered awareness, authenticity, and integrity, and what I refer to as a physics of completion and connection. And connection with our own authenticity and our own integrity is what enables us to integrate our stories as experiences that don't necessarily need to define us. They can serve as springboards or catalysts into the recognition of our own inherent magnificence.
Wow. So that's amazing. And thank you for sharing that story. I really want to get into when you talked about the heart-centered awareness and your teaching around that. Can you talk a little bit about that? And also, I want to get into the science of integrity and how you define that. But if we could just move into heart-centered awareness and what you teach in your seminars, I'd love to talk about that a little.
Absolutely. Heart-centered awareness, it can be defined differently depending upon who you speak to. And, I teach heart-centered awareness as really a gateway and a portal into our intuition, into knowing without knowing how we know, and into what I refer to as a consciousness of completion. Really, our heart field is the only part of ourselves that knows itself as being inherently whole and complete and limitless as that which is love. And so when we embody heart-centered awareness, we're actually able to override the programming and the conditioning and the perceived limitations that have occurred through the course of our lifetimes, whether we're talking about our our family upbringing or societal upbringing or societal expectations, these all run like programs in our mind. And when we're running these habitual programs based on limitation, disconnection, separation, fear, and so forth, those programs run us. And heart-centered awareness is a space of being that allows us to transcend the limitations of the mind and the limitations of duality to access a space of unity and connection and completion. And therefore, we are able to integrate our stories and our experiences and our limitations, not as something that defines us, but as simply something that has served as a placeholder in our awareness to reflect back some aspect of self-love or not loving self that we've not yet recognized.
Wow. Okay. So my question is, how do we do that? What are some ways that we create that heart-centered awareness in us? Can you give us a few ideas and theories around what you teach people to do to get there?
First, I'll say that there are as many different ways to experience centered awareness as there are unique individuals in the world.
Billions and billions, yeah, right.
Literally infinite, right. Infinite distinctions that can be made. And so what I'll say to all of our listeners is that centering in the field of the heart and embodying heart-centered awareness and being in the field of the heart it's unique to everyone. And I will add that being in the field of the heart is our natural state. It's really as easy as breathing. And in many instances, it's not so much that we notice the experience of being in the field of the heart. We actually notice the experience when we leave our hearts. So a lot of times, while I can teach many different ways for navigating your consciousness into the field of the heart, it's almost easier to recognize that heart-centered awareness is what we are. It's our own natural state. It's never possible to not be in the heart. What is possible is that we migrate our awareness away from that recognition. It's like,
that's really cool. Okay. Yeah. Got it.
Well, I was just going to give kind of an analogy, you know, if we were fish and we're not, but if we were fish and we were swimming underwater and someone were to ask us the question, you know, how do you breathe underwater? We would say, what are you talking about? This is just the way things are. But if you take us as fish out of the water, what happens when we're out of our natural habitat, our natural state of being, is we suddenly feel constricted, we feel suffocated, we feel tense. We are the proverbial fish out of water. And so when we leave our hearts, we often will feel tense and constricted and anxious and disassociated in many, many instances. And so that becomes a cue or a placeholder for us to recognize, hey, we've moved our consciousness away from our home base, heart-centered awareness, the embodied presence and centering in our being. And we're occupying some other environment that is not natural to our own state of wholeness, self-love, and completion. And the moment you notice you've left your heart, you're mired in the parade of the imagined terribles, or you're anxious about the future or ruminating about the past, or you're over in someone else's environment, you know, trying to fix things. These are all examples of when we leave our hearts. And the moment we notice, all we have to do is connect and bring ourselves back into this space of grace that we can call heart-centered awareness. It's really an embodied presence. It's centering in your own physical body, because the body is kind of the container or the construct for heart-centered awareness. But you can experience being in the field of the heart literally in your big toe, because the field of the heart includes everything as an extension and a part of itself. And so sometimes when I'm teaching students or I'm sharing information like in an audio interview, I will say, you know, bring your awareness anywhere between your throat and the base of your pelvic floor. That could represent, if you drop now down in your consciousness, anywhere between the throat and the base of your pelvic floor, that could represent a centering in the field of the heart. I'm not talking about the physical heart. I'm not even talking about the heart chakra. I'm talking about this point of a nexus where your individual awareness meets that which is transpersonal in nature. It's this point of where nothing meets everything. And there's really no right or wrong way to access that point. It's simply a construct to guide you into accessing a connection with yourself. So technically, we could be in the field of our hearts when our consciousness is in our big toe, because our heart field includes all of us and it expands beyond that. And so one more way that I'll share is that rather than dropping into the field of the heart, I sometimes like to share with students centering one's awareness inside what I refer to as our love sphere. And you read about this in Practical Play, right? Hearts Way and Little Book. It's like this transparent bubble of unconditional love that will expand or constrict according to our preference. So do this now. See yourself inside a bubble that is clear. It's transparent. You can make it translucent. You can actually make it any color you choose. And allow for this exterior construct, this love sphere, to represent your personal reality bubble, your exteriorization of heart-centered awareness, which is all of your infinite consciousness potential. And it also includes all of your thoughts, your opinions, your beliefs, and your experiences. It's your unique reality bubble that is connected to absolutely everything.
I love that exercise. That's so awesome to give us a tool to feel connected and to understand. But I want to go back to what you were saying about when we are aware. I'm a little slower at this. So when you said, when you become aware, do you find that that awareness in that moment where you're like, I'm like, I love the fish out of the water, but it's, you know, that whole idea. But when we are aware, that is the place where we can make a choice to bring ourselves back to that heart-centered awareness. So can you teach me about that? Like that moment where we notice we're out.
Absolutely. You know? Awareness is power, and awareness becomes the aha moment. And
right.
you can even set it up that the moment you're aware, that brings your consciousness back. So there's nothing to do.
Right.
So let's go ahead and do this. Why don't you, go ahead and think about something that, and I'll invite all of our listeners to do the same thing. Think about something that's going on in your life that you consider to be a problem or a challenge or a condition that's a struggle.
I'm there.
You know, it can be, you don't take us a moment, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and we don't have to limit it to one, but we'll just go ahead and use one as a placeholder that could represent all of our problems. And go ahead and give that problem a location in your love sphere, in your field. For example, when I'm thinking about what I refer to as this placeholder, mine's about 60 degrees out on my left-hand side, about 3 feet in front of me. Any location that gets your attention.
And it is important to give it a location.
For this exercise that we're doing right now that I'm making up in the moment, yeah, because I want people to be able to follow along, but you don't
feel it. No, I'm just asking, like, you know, so people understand, like, it's important to give it a location. Okay. And it's more of just following your intuition, like where it lands. Cause I see
there is no right or wrong place. Just
right.
Pick, choose any spot.
I got it. Okay. I'm right,
all right
there.
Yeah. So where is yours, Kelly?
Well, I'm not as scientific or specific as you, but I have my hand up with my fingers together, and it's like right out to the left side of my love sphere, right there. Like
that's perfect. Yeah. And this requires absolutely no scientific knowledge. Saying where's the chair in the room? Well, the chair is to my right.
Yeah,
it's exactly
to the left.
Like that.
Right.
And you literally could pick an object in the room if you want, if that makes it easier for any of our listeners. All right, so it's to the left. All right, go ahead and move all of your consciousness into that problem, into that challenge. In other words, dive into it. And notice what thoughts, sensations, perceptions, or experiences occur for you as you're diving into that problem. I know for myself, I feel constricted. I feel stressed. I feel icky. Like I even get a bad taste in my mouth.
I'm short of breath and anxious right now.
Yeah. Like, come on, Melissa, get on with the exercise because I'm about to die. All right. So whatever any of our listeners notice, just trust that. This is just awareness as information. All right. Now invite your awareness to move back into your physical body and anywhere between, say, your throat and your knees.
Okay.
Just drop back into your physical body and now connect up to that pattern of information, that placeholder, that problem, that condition, and tell me what you notice differently about it from the framework of heart-centered awareness.
Well, I just got very still.
You got very still, and the anxiousness and the shortness of breath dissipated?
Yes.
Okay.
For some reason, and I there's no thinking involved with it, Melissa.
I can explain to you, but any explanation is just a description of may be happening in the physics of integrity. But what ends up happening when we leave our hearts, we lose access to the leverage that we have when we are connected to the only part of ourselves that is inherently whole and complete and has access to all possibilities simultaneously. When we leave our hearts and we go and spiral in the vortex of that problem or that condition or that challenge, we have no leverage. We are literally, it's like being in a cesspool where we can't actually get out and access other possibilities. There's no compassion for the waveform, so to speak, from a physics standpoint. So really, when you stay home and you're centered in the field of your heart, in an embodied awareness and a presence, you have access to interacting with that pattern from a space of completion, from a complete vantage point that gives you access to different choice points. You're not in it. It doesn't hook you in entirely the same way, because what hooks us has us.
Mm. Wow.
Does that make sense to you?
It makes sense. And it's also a physical sensation, and it's a feeling. So it doesn't have to make complete sense to me. Does that make sense?
And this is what I tell students, is that understanding is not necessary for an experience. Experience leads us to understanding. So you don't have to understand the physics at all. In fact, understanding the physics, we don't need to understand how electricity functions in order to turn on a light switch in our room.
Right.
And so what we're really doing is just mapping our way back to our own natural state. And what surfaces from heart-centered awareness is truly the power of choice. When we're mired in the vortex of the cesspool of the problem or the challenge or the condition, we don't really have choice, because we're inside that pattern. But when we're embodied in the field of the heart, we have access to this vast sea of limitless possibilities, rather than anchoring into the buoy of the problem. It's a very different way of relating. But when we make this subtle shift in our consciousness, everything ripples differently.
Well, and look how simple that was.
It's so simple. I actually made it more complicated than it even needs to be. I mean, but I really wanted to make sure everybody could get how truly simple this is.
Yeah, I love that. The heart-centered awareness. I mean, it's just such a simple exercise. But what I want to switch gears, because I really want to talk about integrity with you, because I know it's a topic that you're currently writing on, and it's one of my favorite topics to talk about. So can you talk a little bit about how you define integrity and the science of integrity?
Indeed. And my forthcoming book, The Integrity Effect, unpacks the experience of living in integrity without necessarily relying on the physics, because I cover the physics in Little Book of Big Potentials. But I define integrity as an unbroken, abiding connection with our true authentic self, and living coherently and congruently in all endeavors. And so to me, integrity is its authenticity as self-love, as completion. And quite honestly, integrity is everything. Integrity is, it's not some external standard that we have to constantly seek or strive for, or some moving target. And it's not even a moralistic construct, although integrity can give birth to moral standards. Integrity is really a connection to the field of the heart, and a connection to our own unique individuality, not as separate beings, but as extensions of an interconnected all. And so I define integrity as connection to you, connection to me in the we experience, But in that we experience, there is an equal service to self and an equal service to others. A lot of times we define integrity by virtue of, you know, how much we love others. But if we aren't really loving ourselves, then we don't have a limitless resource of love to give to others. So it really starts with coming into a cohesive and congruent relationship with our true authentic self, and then letting that ripple out into what I call true authentic relating.
And how do we get there? What do we do to get to that personal integrity?
Well, do we have all day?
Hey, can you give us in 3 steps, you know, like, you know, the American people like it.
So in a simplified manner, and I've unpacked it in a million different ways in my forthcoming book, and we play shop this extensively in the seminars, but integrity is the embodiment of heart-centered awareness coupled with the mind as the power of choice. And so it really starts with living first from the field of the heart and trusting the information that emerges from the field of the heart, the intuitive knowing without knowing how we know. This is the beginning of living in integrity, because the heart is... it has an innate sensor for truth. And I'm not talking about universal truth. I'm talking about a personal truth, that my truth doesn't have to be your truth. But there is, within our personal truth, there are transpersonal truths that always ripple through the human experience. And so living from our hearts first is one way to begin to establish integrity. Trusting ourselves is another way to establish integrity. An additional way is to, you know, pay attention, or as I like to say, play attention to the situations and the circumstances that are showing up as placeholders in your life, as patterns in your life that may be cues that you're not necessarily in integrity. For example, I referenced earlier in the interview how I was in the pharmaceutical industry and I had this allegedly great career that I had cultivated for more than a decade. And I started to notice I no longer loved the things that I was doing. The things that used to bring me joy started to make me feel resentfully supportive. Mm-hmm. And I started to feel tired all the time. My body began to get sick. These were cues that my life was not fully in integrity with the callings of my heart. And so you can actually start to recognize integrity by virtue of its perceived absence. And it's super empowering. It doesn't need to be a limitation or something that we need to shy away from. It's an invitation and an opening into the possibility that we can make different choices and we can have a life without that aligns with the true callings of our heart from within.
I love that. An invitation and an opening to align. Say that again. I really like that. It really hit me.
I don't know if I can say it exactly the same way.
An invitation and an opening to align with the true possibilities.
The true callings of our heart.
The true callings of our heart. So that is so beautiful.
Thank you. And really what we're talking about is as within, so without. A lot of our dissatisfaction with life, a lot of our experiences, even of depression and feeling inauthentic, it's a gap between how we really are within our hearts and how we've conditioned our life and our external situations and circumstances. The gap between who we truly are and how we've conditioned ourselves to be can create feelings of dissatisfaction. And when we can bridge that gap through heart-centered awareness, because the field of the heart knows no gaps, then integrity naturally follows. It's actually not something that we have to create. It's a natural progression of the expression of our own innate limitless potential.
That's fabulous. And speaking of dissatisfaction and what's going on in our world right now, I really want to get into what is happening at the collective and why, and what's going on right now. And I wanted to get your take on it, because I really want to hear your take on what's happening with our country and the divisiveness and everybody freaking out and going into fear right now, because I have my own beliefs, but I can't wait to hear what you have to say about it.
And I'm laughing not at what's happening. I'm laughing at the intensified contrast and the ridiculosity of what appears to be happening. And let me preface anything that I'm about to say with, this is simply my perspective. My perspective doesn't need to be your perspective, Kelly, or any of our listeners' perspectives. I'm going to offer insight as an access point for personal and collective empowerment.
Thank you. That's wonderful.
As I've been shown, what is occurring at the level of the collective is an outloop or a distorted reflection based on the projections of our own divisive consciousness within ourselves at the individual level. That's one way of looking at it. In other words, we're outlooping the dualities as separation and contrast as an opportunity for us to integrate those dualities as polarities from a space of unity. That's at one level. At another level, like if we just look, say, horizontally, and I like to talk about it this way, and I talk about this in my next book, if we just look at what appears to be happening at the collective level horizontally, it looks like everything's falling apart. Our traditional paradigms, culturally, economically, politically, they seem to be unraveling. They seem to be falling apart. And the things that we've relied upon for order in the collective we experience, it seems like everything is just coming apart. And if we look at what appears to be happening at the collective level from a vertical consciousness, which is available through heart-centered awareness, we actually recognize that, well, things may appear to be falling apart, but they're actually coming together in an entirely new way, because the traditional path that we have been following is not, at a physics level, sustainable. The field imprints that have been playing out at the collective level, based on fear, based on confusion, based on separation, disconnection, surrogate power structures, that is not sustainable. And so within this chaos and this excessive contrast, there is a reconfiguring that's happening at the most deepest level of consciousness that is going to open us into truly a space of unity and connection and compassion and completion for both individual as well as the collective we. And so, yeah, at one level, it looks really scary. And, you know, 1 hour of TV a night and you can, you know, paralyze yourself into fear. But that's just one vantage or one layer of what is actually happening. You know, if we look at the whole picture, there's a beautiful, beautiful opportunity for the individual to bring self-love as completion through authenticity and integrity, but that ripples out into the collective. And we're going to be creating what I refer to as new heart prints. We have to hang in there and let go at the same time.
Hang in there, because I was just going to ask you, like, okay, that's wonderful. And I could hear some women in my community going, that's all great, you know, because I can go there. I actually do go there. I go, okay, you know what? This is on the collective. I actually agree with most of what you're saying. I'm like, yeah, it makes sense, you know, from the big picture. But how do we, living on this earth as individuals, really participate in elevating that space and be able to keep ourselves out of that fear space regarding financial issues, you know, issues regarding about discrimination, all of that.
All issues. And it really boils down to one heart print and choice point at a time. The consciousness that we hold in every single moment matters more than the actual choices that we make. In other words, if we're righteously indignant about some act of discrimination that has occurred, and I mean, I could give you a thousand right now.
A million, right?
It's so heightened at this point. If we're righteously indignant about that, and we go up against that from a space of righteous indignation, going up against a pattern that we want to change, we are actually holding a consciousness of divisiveness, and we will perpetuate the very pattern and the very imprint that we are seeking to change. Whereas if we approach any discrimination or we could plug in anything that's happening. If we approach it from a space of unity and a space of compassion, not only for ourselves, but for those that are holding the limited frame of consciousness, and we are able to occupy multiple perspectives simultaneously, that gives us more leverage or wiggle room into that pattern changing than if we go up against it from a space of duality. Because, you know, even if we're trying to be like a truth teller and reveal all the conspiracy theories, if we're trying to reveal from a space of division, we're actually going to perpetuate the very division that we are seeking to overcome.
Yes, I so agree with you. And that's why I've been so resistant, like even during the election and anything. For Women for One, I definitely believe that, you know, all women need to have a voice and to get really clear on the fact that there is no reason to approach this black and white thinking that we're dividing ourselves into. And we do approach that, and we set that intention to approach it that way in this resistant way. Resist, fight. It's just going to perpetuate it.
It does. It's amazing.
And
there's a science behind it. I talk about it in chapter 9 of the forthcoming book, The Integrity Effect, about why some of these prevailing paradigms appear to be so slow to change. And there's these imprints in the collective that if we go up against them, we actually, like if we're trying to resist a particular paradigm, that actually empowers that paradigm.
Yeah.
And this is a difficult concept for people to understand. And I am not advocating sitting back and, you know, staying on your couch and just going, oh, it's all love and light, because it isn't. And I'm a big proponent of taking action. But the consciousness we hold when we take action is crucial and pivotal to the outcome of that choice that we make and every choice that we make. So when we're making choices from a space of self-love as completion, wholeness, authenticity, and integrity, then that's projected and reflected out in our situations accordingly. If we are resisting, and in that resistance, we are bringing up in our love hologram every time we've ever felt marginalized or discriminated against, and it becomes an out loop of every time we weren't loving ourselves fully or someone wasn't loving us completely, then that all gets encoded in the resistance. And it actually amplifies the very thing we want to change.
I love that, because it's the victim mentality is what I call it personally. And it does, it's divisive. And I think it's so powerful right now to hold that intention of consciousness as we're moving forward. And I really like that you said, I'm not an advocate of sitting back in that apathetic way and not taking action, but really when you take action, I just want to reinforce what you said and make sure that I understand it. When you take action, you have to hold that intention and space of wholeness and unity, right? That's what you're saying.
Indeed, in essence, and it's not a cerebral intellectual concept. It's actually an embodiment of heart-centered awareness. That's the natural language of the heart. The natural language of the heart is its connection, its completion. The heart does not divide. It does not polarize. The heart is a consciousness of unity. It's a consciousness of completion. And so when we embody that completion, then that becomes that is mirrored or reflected in everything that we do. I talk about it in terms of coherency, congruency, and integrity in action. Coherency is it's that connection to the coherent sea of infinite potential that is available through heart-centered awareness. And then congruency is aligning ourselves with choices, situations, and circumstances that reflect our true nature as love and compassion. And then integrity in action is following through with choices that reflect that coherency and congruency.
Right. And so, okay, so if we go into women in general and our voices right now, because that's what Women for One is all about, really having women dive in to rediscover their voice and take action in their own lives to embody their heart, you know, and go into the heart, take action for making their life happen on their own terms. That's what we're about. So what happens? Okay, so here we are encouraging people to speak truth. What happens in your perspective when we betray that truth and we betray ourselves and we get silent and we don't speak our truth and really embody what we believe to be true for ourselves?
A lot of things happen. It's it's in a sense, it's a form of soul betrayal. When we silence the callings of the heart and we do not, speaking our truth or living our truth, to me, they're the same. Sometimes we can embody a truth without ever uttering a word, and that speaks volumes. And so, living that truth, I call it true authentic expression, and then speaking our truth it's so important because it's an honoring and a listening of self in relation to self. And the single most important committed relationship we will ever be in is that with ourself. In death, we do not part. And when we ignore our heart, when we ignore ourselves, when we do not speak our truth, and we do not listen to ourselves, which is really what speaking our truth is all about, and then it's less consequential whether other people hear us. But when we do not speak our truth, situations and circumstances will show up in our lives to beckon our attention. I actually call it the ricochet effect and collateral damage. And in the ricochet effect and collateral damage, this results in situations and circumstances kind of skewing sideways. There's actually a physics and a geometry to it. And none of it is detrimental from the standpoint that it's all an opportunity. And so I would say for all of our listeners, if you haven't been speaking your truth, living your truth, it's never too late. It's never too late. Every moment is an opportunity to step into integrity. Integrity awaits all of us timelessly, just like the field of the heart does. But take a look at the situations and the circumstances in your life. You know when you're not in integrity. You get a feeling. It will scream louder and louder and louder until you pay attention to it. Does that answer your question?
Yes. Yes, we do know. And I love that you're encouraging everybody. They do know when they're not in integrity.
Absolutely. And, some of the programs that run in the collective is trying to convince us that we don't know. I mean,
right.
That we need someone or something outside of ourselves in order to tell us what we need to know, in order to steer us in the right direction. And there's nothing wrong with getting help, but we have our own internal GPS that can navigate us through any situation or circumstance. And we always know. We absolutely always know. And every time we ignore that inner knowing, when we ignore the hunches that are based on far more information than we can consciously access, every time we ignore that, we will get a sign or a cue from the universe, a placeholder to reflect back to us that we need to pay attention. So even when our life skews totally sideways, even when we get ricocheted and we're collateral damage because we're aligning our lives with people that may be out of integrity or with surrogate power structures that may be out of integrity, even when that happens, there's an alignment. There is an alignment in being misaligned that becomes an opportunity. And then we can springboard from there into making a different choice. And this is kind of the key to the MJOY teachings, is that we're never so far off the beaten path that we can't find our way back to home. And home is in the heart, and authenticity and integrity emerge from the heart indelibly as new heart prints awaiting to emerge.
I love that you just said that, because I was about to say, so if you had to circle up everything you said and what MJOY teachings were about, what would they be? So you just answered my question right there. It's so perfect.
That's great. That's great. And I'll just also just add that, we all already are what we wish to become, and we all have all the ingredients within us to live extraordinary lives. And if we simply trust that knowingness, we will be delighted and dazzled and amazed and filled with joy at what emerges, in every single moment as an everyday, every way experience.
So you as a teacher are really just giving us tools to bring us back to ourselves and wholeness and the joy that we already innately know.
In a sense, I would say, what I provide is a plethora of access points, through language as carrier waves for information, the language of light, really. I bring back the recognition that we are all unbroken light. We're like laser beams. We just don't know it. And And so I'm guiding people to access what is innate to everyone. And I've provided a language around that. A lot of times what students will say is, wow, you've given me a language to make sense of my entire life going all the way back to birth. And mm-hmm. you've given me a framework for relating to absolutely everything and creating absolutely everything from a space of completion. And so it's a very integrative framework that goes beyond talking, although, as you know, speaking our truth and living our truth and communication is so important to honoring integrity. It's key.
For ourselves and others in our relationships. I agree. So if you had one, you know, to wrap this up, because this has been such a juicy conversation and I would go on and on, but to really wrap this conversation up, if you had one really powerful slice of wisdom for our community to take away from this, what would you offer them?
I would say that it's a challenging time for everyone. And it's very, very easy to fall into the old habits of fear and recrimination and blame and judgment, and even to get driven to distractions like addictions to kind of palliate what appears to be happening, and realize that whatever is happening in your life, no matter what has happened, every moment is a new opportunity to relate to yourselves in a different way and to bring self-love to the equation. And when we bring self-love to the equation, not as a concept, but as an embodied presence, then that literally changes up our resonance and that changes up our situations and circumstances. And so it can feel challenging and scary. And within the challenge and the scariness is an opportunity, and in the uncertainty, there is an opportunity for curiosity, which can serve as an opening into something being very different in the next moment.
Oh, that's wonderful. So embodying self-love, that's amazing. So where can we find you? Where can our community go? I mean, we'll have your links to your books up and your website, but where are you? Because I know you teach seminars all over the world, and give us some upcoming dates and also a way that you would suggest people who have not accessed you before begin working with you and reading your material and ideas.
Thank you. Well, my website is www.mjoyheartfield.com, and that's MJOY. HEARTFIELD.com. And on that website, there's actually a number of published articles. There are upcoming seminars that are provided, links to my published books, as well as my forthcoming book. And I teach, seminars around the world. The next seminar coming up following the broadcast of this interview will be the MJOY Women's Seminar in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, at the end of April. And that's a beautiful, beautiful, cohesive seminar just for women. That's the only prerequisite. Come exactly as you are. Bring your authentic self. And it's a beautiful seminar where we get to play around with the experience of being women, and we really get to authentically interact with the fields that have sometimes left us feeling powerless or marginalized. And we get to learn how to change up our resonance, change up our experiences, change up the placeholders that may be creating limitations in our lives so that we can experience more self-love, authenticity, and integrity. I also teach webinars twice a month, and these are open to everyone. And this is a great way to start getting familiar with the MJOY vernacular, and it's an hour that can really change your life. And those are also listed on the website. I know you have listeners around the world. I'm also going to be teaching in London and Germany in May, and then I'll be back on the West Coast this summer teaching the MJOY Integrative, which is open for all. So many seminars post, and if you're not a seminar person, then I would say you participate in the books or just peruse the website. You'll actually change just by visiting.
That's awesome. Thank you so much for all of your ideas, thoughts, teachings, Melissa. I'm just so inspired by you and the work you're doing out in the world.
thank you, Kelly, for the opportunity. One of the things that I really love about Women for One, besides the fact that it gives women a voice and really empowers women, is that, you know, there's a lot of people talking about women collaborating and coming together. And a lot of times it's just talk. And what my experience of Women for One has been is that the collaboration, moving beyond competition and comparison and really, really supporting and nurturing women, it's authentic.
Oh, thank you.
I really honor that because it's not easy. And your commitment to that is the epitome of the integrity effect. And I really honor that. And I honor all the women that show up as truth tellers and everyone that's part of this community. It's genuine and it makes a difference.
Thank you so much, Melissa. I can't wait to read The Integrity Effect. I can't wait. I'm excited. So thank you all for listening, and please connect with Melissa and be inspired by everything she's taught us, because I think she's going to just keep teaching the rest of her life, and I can't wait to hear more from her. So thank you again, Melissa. Bye, everyone.